Well, I want to begin by wishing everyone a very Merry Christmas and a blessed Holy Day tonight and tomorrow and the days that come. On behalf of myself, Father Nathan, pastor here, welcome to anybody visiting. Also, Father Andrew Infinger, the associate pastor, who has the Masses at St. Mary's tonight, and he's here tomorrow, so he sends his greetings. All the staff, everyone here at the parish works so hard to welcome you this night, and so we really want to thank you, and we pray for you, and we're just so glad to pray together on this holy and sacred night. So it's good that we're here. Three quick stories, I guess, by way of a homily with some points sprinkled in. First story, the most humiliating one in my case, goes kind of like this. I've been gone this summer for a few months on a sabbatical. Some of you know that. Had the chance to go to Israel for a while in the Alps. Get to that later. Came back after missing the opening of school and feeling a little guilty about not watching all the action here for a while. I went down to the school in October into grade one, and I walked in expecting, you know, some amazing welcome. Oh, hi, Father. Were you gone? I said, yes. I said, so, who can raise their hand and tell me one fun thing you did this summer? So they all went around and gave me their activities, which were amazing and good. And at the end, as I'm feeling very proud that I controlled this classroom so well, one of these kids says to me, raise her hand, she said, Father, aren't you going to talk to us about Jesus? I said, that's a great idea. I'm a disaster as a priest. Sure, let's talk about Jesus. I said, so, Jesus, so kids, I was, over the summer, in the town where Jesus was born. Does anyone here know the name of that town? And so hands went up, and they got right away, Bethlehem. I said, great. I said, does anyone know what Bethlehem means? I said, house of something. Now, disclaimer for you, the answer is bread, house of bread. So they went around, couldn't get it. And so I said, house of, I said, I'll give you a hint, it's like what you had for breakfast. House of, hand goes up, pancakes. I said, no. So I left feeling like such a failure, not only as a catechist and as a priest, because now all of my first graders not only realize I wasn't gone in the first place, but that's fine, but they all think that Jesus was born in an IHOP. Way to go. My bad. It gets, though, to an opening point, I guess, which is this, and it was really cute. They're very sweet. We have good kids here. I'm not picking on them. The point is, we all get kind of familiar with the Christmas story, so much so that we kind of miss some of the details, and we miss what's actually really going on behind the text because we've heard it so many times. There must have been a stable. There must have been animals. There were kings. There were shepherds. There was a star. There was a donkey. There were all these things. It kind of gets piled on top like so many layers of tradition, and after a while, we kind of stop paying attention to what it actually really says in the text. It might actually say he was born in IHOP, for all we know. We don't actually really read it very closely anymore. It's just kind of familiar, like the woodwork, perhaps, right? And we don't want to get to that point, I think, with our faith. We kind of gloss over it, so God bless our first graders for reminding me to really know my story and be on my game about teaching the faith, because we should all be so on top of that, right? Which brings me to the second story, briefly. When I was on sabbatical, I was over in Salzburg for a number of days, and I was staying with an innkeeper, right? Interesting character named Johannes, who I really got to like, a little on the eccentric side, but a very good and holy man. So at one point in the 10 days that I was with him, I made some comment to Johannes, the innkeeper, about the evil innkeepers in the gospel not welcoming the Holy Family into Bethlehem. To which Johannes turns and says to me in his German accent, you know, Father, it doesn't actually say that in the text. I said, well, what does it say? He said, well, look at it. He said, it doesn't mention anything about a stable. There's no bunch of innkeepers who are these evil, rotten people. All that it says was they wrapped him in swaddling clothes and put him in a manger because there was no room in the inn. So he said, where is the evil innkeeper? I said, I don't know. I'll go look it up. So I did, and he's right. He went on to kind of say, he says, I like to think about the innkeeper as maybe not like the worst person, not this villain that we sometimes think about them. He says, I'm an innkeeper. And he says, I think to myself, don't you think that maybe where they were born, the stable out in the back, or whatever it was all that he had? Family shows up at his door. There's no room in his hotel anymore because it's full, and he did what he could. He found a barn, you know? Is that so bad, right? Maybe the innkeeper was a practical, decent person. He's trying to rehabilitate the innkeeper, you see. This is the story, you know? And I said, well, I said, you would say that because you're an innkeeper. He says, I know. He says, aren't we all the innkeeper? No? Which was a really important point to think about. So to ponder that for a second, my friend Johannes has something of a point. He has lots of points, I guess. First of all, he's right about the text. That is what it says. There's no a bunch of innkeepers. There's actually really no barn or stable, per se. We can only guess at it. All it says is a manger, swaddling clothes, and no room in the inn. So it's probably true that the innkeeper in question in this gospel story was exactly what Johannes was saying. Hotel was full, had no other options, and quite likely on his property, in what would have been a cave, actually, for a stable, he would have said, well, you know, I got a barn, best I can do for you, better than nothing, right? So I like the rehabilitation of the innkeeper in this way. It brings us into the story. Because if I go through life thinking that those innkeepers were evil, rotten people, then I forget that maybe I'm a little bit like them sometimes. Most of us here are probably not evil and rotten. We're probably, I would say, rather average. And I'd say that we are rather practical. So the innkeeper was, I'd say, a practical person, probably decent, did what he could for these people, the Holy Family, and, well, you know, that was that. The challenge with that would be this. Now, yes, it puts us in the story. Are we not the innkeeper? But after a while, practical grows kind of cold, doesn't it? It grows kind of routine. And while it works once in a while, when practical becomes the norm for persons, for households, for parishes, for cultures, for a world, after a while, people begin to get shut out. And they get pushed to the margins and pushed to the edges. And coldness creeps into the entire system and into our own lives. It gets kind of crusted over. And Christmas's story gets kind of familiar, and it gets kind of old. And before long, it doesn't really move us so much anymore. So actually, the practical innkeeper is something of a reminder that in all of our different kind of ways, we do turn people away. We're often the ones who do not welcome, miss those on the margins, miss those on the boundaries, and miss the face of Christ who's knocking at our door all the time. We just don't let him in because, well, we're not evil, but we are. Well, we're practical. We are practical, right? Practical is not horrible, but it's not really A effort great either. It's just kind of, well, average. So my friend Johannes, I think, turned me on to an interesting point. You cannot just vilify the innkeepers. I am the innkeeper. You're the innkeeper. Every time we resort to what's practical, we become like these people in the story. But that's actually not the main point, though. It's one of them. Think for a second, practical innkeeper, rehabilitated or not, about how God reacts to the situation. The fact is, no matter what Johannes had to say about it, the reason it's in the story is because St. Luke is trying to make the point that God, who is king, had no room in his own city. He ought to have been welcomed with open arms, should have had the place of honor, should have been front and center and at the highest of places and positions, but instead he's relegated to the barn, in the feeding trough, in the dog dish, so to speak, of the hotel that they could not find a place in. There's something rather sad about that, I guess you could say. But it's the pattern of humanity, isn't it? We did not welcome him enough. We were practical, we were nice, but we were not welcoming enough. That's why it's in the story. So is the innkeeper evil? No. Is he hospitable? Maybe. Is he generous? Possibly. Is he truly welcoming? Not enough. Not enough. And we can't be content with that. Us, the innkeeper, or anybody else, that's not good enough for God. That's what Luke is trying to say. God, being God, could have reacted as follows. He could have sent down lightning from the sky, could have burned up the whole village, could have done some mighty act of power and just smushed everyone because God is God after all, right? Can't he do that? Can't he squish us all like a bunch of bugs under his big feet? Of course he can do that. That's what he should have done. That's what we deserved for being practical. How inspiring is practical, right? But he doesn't. Instead, what God says in all humility is, well, okay, if that's all you got, I'll take the barn. I'll take the couch. If he comes through our door, the door of our hearts, knocking, and we say, well, Lord, I want to put you in my life, but you know my life's full. There's all these things in it. My house is full of priorities, activities, my calendar, my schedule. It's just so full for you, but I got a couch. God says, great, I'll take the couch. When can I move in? It's beautifully humble on God's part. It's profoundly debasing on God's part. It brings God so low and so small. This is what inspired St. Francis of Assisi once upon a time in the 1200s, who loved praying about the baby Jesus as a child, as an infant, to make a manger scene, which is this kind of dressed-up version of the gospel story. It's not all in there, but the scene looks pretty that we're used to. The whole point of him doing that is to emphasize God's humility. Francis of Assisi is trying to say, if only we knew how much he loves us, if only we knew how small he becomes for us, if only we knew how gentle he was to us, if only we grasped how much he loves us. That's why Christmas is front and center. It's to capture our hearts. So we give him more than just the couch. We give him all of our lives. And there's no getting there until we realize he loves us that much to take the scraps that we throw him, me included, a lot of the time, and says, great, I'll take him. I'll take him. That's what it takes to get me into your life. You're just a nose under the door. I'll take what you hand me, God says, and I'll use it and I'll grow it as best I can, because if that's what it takes to save you, then I will do it. Which leads to story number 3, really quick. Related, because it's a similar theme for all of Christ's life, right? I left Salzburg, went down to Jerusalem for 5 weeks I was there, and I found myself on sabbatical living in an old convent built over the spot that by tradition is where Jesus was condemned by Pontius Pilate. It's the stone pavement, Gabbatha, that we hear about on Good Friday, where he is handed to the crowds, where he is condemned, where he is mocked, where he is whipped, where he is crowned with thorns and scourged and handed his cross and sent to walk his death march a mile and a half up the hill, where he is executed as a criminal of the Roman state. So I was in the spot for 5 weeks where he was handed over. While I was there, it occurred to me, as I'm reading my Bible study materials and listening to my professor's talk, and we did all the study of God's Word, right, his scriptures, I thought to myself, isn't it interesting that I'm standing in the spot, living in the spot, where God let himself be handled. He let himself be handled by us. He sort of tied his own hands and chose not to fight back and chose to be quiet. What are we doing here right now in this place? I thought to myself, I'm handling his word like I know what I'm talking about. I don't know what I'm talking about. Johannes told me that much back in Salzburg. He lets us handle him all the time. He enters into history as a baby, and from that moment on, allows us to mistreat his word, to misspeak in his name, to abuse in his name, to make war in his name, to preach years and years of bad homilies in his name. He must stand here and watch me with this wry grin going, are you kidding me? He says nothing. He lets us handle him. You ever watch a baby get passed around a room? We just kind of handle these little kids, you know, what can they do about it? Nothing. As we handle the baby in the room, like, oh, isn't this great? Here's the baby, pass it around. That's what God lets us do to him over and over again. He lets us have our way with him. In humility, in smallness, in defenselessness. Ultimately, on the cross. The cross is just the completion of Bethlehem. He knew how it was going to end. Even as a baby, it just sort of made sense, didn't it? That he would end rejected and handled. And how does he respond? He loves us anyway. He loves us so much that he becomes one of us over and over again on the altar in the Eucharist, in his word from the ambo preached, in his mediocre priest like myself, in our own efforts that we make kind of half-heartedly. He lets it all be enough for him. So what's the point? At the heart of the entire thing, back to Christmas, right? The reason the feast is in the calendar every year, the reason it's all dressed up like it is, the whole point is to come back to the idea of realizing just how much he loves us. What kind of God do we believe in who lets us handle him like we do? The one who's born, the one who lives, the one who dies, the one who gives and gives and gives and gives. That is the Christian God. It is unique among any other faith on the earth. So at Francis of Assisi and the manger scene, and every single year we come back to the truth of having to drink in how much he loves us. If only we knew how much he loves us. If only we knew, we would never, ever leave his side again. That's the God that I want. The one in the crib, the one on the cross. If only we knew how much he loves us. Merry Christmas.